Tonight, Hollywood takes a few hours out from making movies and making money to pat itself on the back. The Oscars represent the film industry's view of the best actors, best directors, and the best film of the year. The implication is that the rest of what Hollywood churns out is not the best. That's what spurred roving correspondent Bob Garfield to make his own contribution to the art and science of motion pictures. This is his story.
It all begins at the video store. 16,000 titles and not one blessed thing I care to rent. Volcano, Murder at 1600, Biodome. I mean, please. How can Hollywood spend billions year in and year out and still make such terrible movies? Where's the storytelling? Where are the modern classics? Where are the Casablancas of the 90s? Where? I asked the clerk. Where?
If I wanted to rent a movie that would make me laugh and make me cry and move me and excite me and make me think about the world that we live in, anything you suggest?
Yeah, I would probably suggest Pretty Woman.
Because, I suppose, Weekend at Bernie's is already rented. All right, that does it. If Hollywood can't come up with a moving, witty, timeless saga, I will. I mean, I have all kinds of stories mined from years of journalism. Why not take some real-life situations and fictionalize them, not only for their inherent drama, but also for enduring universal themes of love, honor, power, and moral ambiguity? I can do that. I can, and I will. In no time at all, I emerge with a four-page treatment for Belgrade, a tale of love and betrayal set against the backdrop of political upheaval in the former Yugoslavia. Not to seem arrogant or anything, but I feel fairly confident in saying it will be the next Casablanca, and it will save Hollywood's soul. The only problem is, I'm not sure I know how to find the right studio to film it.
Paramount Pictures, can I help you?
Is this Paramount Pictures?
Mm-hmm.
May I speak to Mr. Paramount, please?
Mr. Paramount?
Yes, please.
There isn't any Mr. Paramount here, I'm sorry. Paramount was it. It's just a logo name.
Oh. As I say, this being the first time I've saved Hollywood's soul, there are a few subtleties of the industry I'm not thoroughly schooled in.
Story department?
Hi, this is Bob Garfield. Listen, I've got a film idea. It's the next Casablanca.
Right, I need to stop you right here, please, and explain to you what the submission policy for Warner Brothers Studios is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This office can only accept story material of any type through a licensed literary agent who is also signatory to the Writers Guild of America.
Now, this is the next Casablanca we're talking about.
Right, stop you right now. That's the policy that was established by the Warner Brothers legal department for this office.
So I need an agent.
Right.
Now, I had a guy come out and look at our soil from the county. Now, he was an agent.
Wait. That's all I can really tell you over the phone.
He said it was too alkaline.
Okay, good luck to you.
Bye. Turns out that one of Hollywood's big problems is that it doesn't have a very good mechanism for being made aware of blockbuster ideas that will transform and redeem the industry. Even when you're standing there with a silver platter bearing a transcendent tale of love and betrayal set against the backdrop of political upheaval in the former Yugoslavia, you just can't believe how hard it is getting someone to take you seriously in that town.
Tony Safford's office.
Hi, this is Bob Garfield.
Yes.
I have a film idea that's a complete blockbuster. It's going to change the industry. That's the next Casablanca, and I was wondering who I could talk to get it produced.
Well, the first thing you can do, first of all, that I would suggest is why don't you fax us a cover letter or fax us some kind of a, one or two page synopsis, kind of outlining the story, what you want to do with it, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say I fax it in and get it there Monday.
Yeah.
When do you think we would go into production?
Well, don't you have to write a script first?
Yeah, but I know where we're going with that, because the idea itself is so strong that the script will pretty much just write itself.
Yes.
So let's say that took...
Somebody has to sit down and write the script.
Yeah, let's say that took 3 months, for argument's sake.
Usually it would take longer than that.
I'll be doing it. And I'm fast.
Well, okay, keep going.
When can I reasonably expect shooting to begin?
You know what? I mean, I really, you know, you're asking, like, completely ridiculous questions because none of this is, you know, everything is up for, you know, it has to be approved, greenlit, right. Has to go through committee. You know, I mean, it's not just something that just gets, it just doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying?
I understand, and I wouldn't even be asking the questions, but I have a wedding to go to in May, and I'm just afraid that the shoot is going to interfere with my wedding plans.
Really? Uh-huh.
Hello? What's with the young kids today? Always copying an attitude. Well, maybe that's what I get for calling at the servants' entrance. There's no point wasting my time with secretaries and assistants. I noticed that Steven Spielberg is in Washington for some big movie opening from this DreamWorks studio of his, so I shuffle some things on my calendar and arrange to see him.
Mr. Spielberg. This movie seems very nice, but what about a story of love and betrayal set against the backdrop of political upheaval in the former Yugoslavia? Mr. Spielberg? Mr. Spielberg, the next Casablanca.
Steven passed. Just as well. DreamWorks has backed nothing but losers. How in the world will I ever get hooked up with someone to back my surefire winner?
Basically, you got to crawl through any entrance, half-open window, or temporarily open door you can find.
Meet Sean Daniel, a former Universal Studios executive who in the past few years has produced such films as Dazed and Confused and Michael. A friend of a friend suggested I call him because the guy really knows the ropes. I'll say he does. Oh, what half-open window would that be, Sean? Look, he isn't explicitly requesting first crack at producing Belgrade. Why would he undermine his own negotiating position? But let's just say he isn't trying too hard to hide his intense interest under a thin veil of avuncular advice.
You mentioned that you have the next Casablanca. When you're out here, I want to hear the story.
Oh, you don't want to hear it right now?
I want you to come out here, be subjected to my and everyone else's penetrating gaze.
You've got a deal.
Okay.
I will be in touch. In touch? I'm going to be in Clover, in Fat City. Hey, baby, in pictures.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you to the Los Angeles International Airport. The time here is 10:10.
You can't save anyone's soul from 3,000 miles away. I didn't particularly want to come to L.A., not with all the sharks out here, not with El Nino, not with Nicole's killers still on the loose. But there's still the small formality of getting a producer on board, and that means getting a little face time with the players. My first move, therefore, is to head straight for the Raleigh Studios offices of Sean Daniel. The guy could barely contain his enthusiasm on the phone, and I can certainly envision walking away with a deal. It takes me ages to find a space in the parking garage, but then, ensconced in his office, I spin the tale set in the weary, gray, corrupt Serbian capital during last winter's pro-democracy demonstrations.
On stage, we see he's famously a bachelor. He's almost monkishly devoted to his ideas. Dragon debate through the first part of the film. He's in his dressing room getting undressed, and she's standing there naked. And his firebrand says, "Don't be a coward. This is time for cowards to step aside and let the heroes come forward." And Alexander says, "Don't mistake vanity for heroism." Alexander remembers that vengeance is an instinct, an itch that you're supposed to scratch. But in any event, he lunges at the shadow who's holding the gun, and he winds up shot. That's the movie.
When I finish, he is visibly startled by the profundity, the poignancy, the simple humanity of what he has heard.
The fact is, it's highly political and full of drama, but a really hard sell. I mean, Bob, Titanic. I thought you were going to come to me with the Lusitania. I mean, this is meaningful, powerful, and important. And as you know, those are the qualities that we don't actually seek out a lot in movie making, and it's a tough one.
Can I ask you one question?
Anything.
Do you validate?
Parking, not your existence.
That, frankly, hurt. I was more or less expecting him to get out his checkbook, but, you know, his loss. Now, my story happens to be a little light on sinking ocean liners, heavy on texture and human conflict. So I pick myself up and call on the director of the year's most textured Hollywood film, L.A. Confidential. And sure enough, Curtis Hanson sits there at perfect attention as I begin to let my tale unfold.
Curtis, in my left hand, I am holding the next Casablanca. It's a tale of love and betrayal set against the backdrop of political upheaval in the former Yugoslavia. It's a film about moral ambiguity and about the seduction of politics, but it's not about politics, it's not love.
Bob, could you either move back a little bit or sit down? I'm getting sort of a stiff neck.
Hanson passed too. You know, this is an awfully long way to come just to get blown off. It's not as though I'm peddling some extravagant disaster flick with lots of gimmicky special effects. I'm offering a timeless piece of art, which, it turns out, may be precisely my problem.
People who come to Hollywood with a desire to make money, they do very well here. And people who come with a desire to improve the art of cinema or to become artists, they tend to do badly.
Peter Bart, former producer, erstwhile studio executive, and current editor of Daily Variety, tells me to forget trying to save Hollywood's soul because Hollywood doesn't want to be saved. Instead, he encourages me to come up with a movie that a producer will imagine, that the studios will imagine, that the ticket-buying masses will flock to see. The thing is, this is a Thursday, and I have to get back to Washington by Monday for a dental appointment. I ask Peter my odds of leaving town with a deal in my hands.
Everybody's got a chance.
Am I going to make it?
No.
All right. I'm beginning to get the message. By the time I get in to see Ron Shelton, director of Bull Durham, Tin Cup, and White Men Can't Jump, it's pretty obvious that the prospects for Belgrade are not great. But then Ron, who's been through the wars himself, puts the situation in tragic perspective.
Hollywood is in the fast food business. Hollywood is now to movies what McDonald's is to food.
Yeah, it's a Big Mac town, and I'm standing there, in all modesty, with pheasant under glass. But what am I going to do? Give in? Sell out? Prostitute my art? Never. But I could, you know, maybe slightly alter my approach, just a tiny bit, just to get my foot in the door. Maybe with a story that's a little more accessible, one that hits a specified number of sites on the consumer marketing target, a commercial story calculated to appeal to the limited imaginations of the Philistines who run this industry. They want cookie-cutter movies here. So if I'm ever going to get a break, maybe I ought to consider starting with a cookie-cutter movie. And so I tell Ron about this other idea I've been sort of noodling with. It's about a handsome, vacuous, rich guy who gets elected president, but hates it because his wife and campaign manager are now running the country and he's completely out of the loop. A bird in a gilded cage, a prisoner of the Oval Office, who, just for the subversive thrill of it, starts sneaking out of the White House and pulling an ever-escalating series of pranks, culminating in a bank robbery, disguised, of course, in a rubber mask.
He peels off a 20. She gives him change for the 20. He takes $1.
Excuse me, Secretary
leaves.
McGill. I'm afraid I think you have mischaracterized American policy.
American policy is that the compound of the American embassy
and
in Beijing,
at the same time he's reconciled with his wife. So in the end, he even finds true love.
You can get a deal on that one. You can't get a deal on that one. I mean, I'm sure you can get a deal on that one. Because the morons that write the checks can get that. Yeah, that's a very sellable pitch. I mean, you could go to Warner Brothers. I can make a call to Warner Brothers. You could get in there. I'll call right now. Watch this. Hi. Hi, it's Ron for Rob.
Incredible. So that's how it'll have to be. Sell the contrived commercial production, then save Hollywood's soul. Ron Shelton gets me into both Warner Brothers and MGM, and sure enough, the Warner executive likes my pitch. He likes the story, he likes my delivery, the gags, the themes. The only trouble he has, his assistant later explains, is the idea of the President of the United States robbing a bank. In other words, just the premise. But then I head over to MGM to meet Gregory Foster, Executive Vice President for Production, who listens very carefully to the White House bandit. Then, just like that, in just the way you always read about, he makes a decision that has a huge impact on my future and my finances, who knows, maybe for years to come. He says no.
It feels like a cookie-cutter movie to me. It feels like a movie that has been conceived to try and hit certain sights on the target to be commercial. It feels enormously calculated. I would pass very quickly. Just say it's not my kind of movie, because it's not.
Did I miss something there? He couldn't have hated it that much. I must have missed something there.
Hello, Greg Foster.
Greg, Bob Garfield. Listen, just by way of follow-up, I suppose a two-picture deal is out of the question.
I think it's going to be kind of tough to give you a two-picture deal.
Oh.
Well, it looks like that's that. I finally maneuver myself into the offices of the decision-makers, chances I'll probably never have again, and walk out with nothing. I have one meeting left with a producer named Al Ruddy, and then it's back to Washington empty-handed. I mean, I'll pitch him, but this guy produced The Godfather, for crying out loud, and 100 other movies. So what's he going to say about the White House bandit?
It's a very nice story. Taking a schnook, basically, at the beginning. And you're going to make him a man of the people by the end. And it makes a great statement, I think. With that idea, yeah, I would probably be interested. It's a very clever idea. Really is.
And get this. If I can find a director willing to attach himself to the project, Ruddy will finance a script. In other words, I am that close to selling this movie. Goodbye, Belgrade. Hello, the White House bandit. But time is running out, so I call a guy named Rick Hess, who's a producer, but who used to be an agent and who has been helping me make connections and who has a friend named Russell Mulcahy, the Australian director of The Shadow and Highlander and a bunch of horror flicks, who Rick says is looking to tackle a new genre. And Rick would be happy to fax over my treatments. And the next thing you know...
Message 1 was received at 3:30 p.m. today.
Hi, it's Rick Hess calling. And I just want to let you know that I spoke with Russell Mulcahy. He's very interested in this. He's got people that will finance movies that he wants to do, so this is a great situation for you. Good luck.
Very engaging, warm characters and situations. An original way of telling a story, and a potential for just a highly moving and amusing and warm movie. You can say that, yes, I am interested, and take it from there.
He likes it. He likes it. I needed to find a director, and I found one who wants to shoot the wrong movie. Russell Mulcahy has read both of my treatments, and the one he's infatuated with is Belgrade. Oh, it's a worthy story, of course, the next Casablanca and all that, but I'm pretty sure that Al Ruddy, as a producer, is more interested in a frothy, Washington-based comedy adventure than in, say, A Tale of Love and Betrayal, set against the backdrop of political upheaval in the former Yugoslavia. Actually, I'm very sure.
If you sell that one, you are truly, truly a great storyteller. The subject matter alone stopped me in my tracks.
But anyway, so here's the development. Russell loves Belgrade.
He did.
He did.
Is he taking his medicine?
A producer for one movie and a director for another. What the hell do I do now? Do I stack my chips behind the story that has to be told or the story that's apt to be sold to save Hollywood's soul or sell mine?
It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die.
But who says I have to make a decision now? I have that town eating out of my hand. Maybe I'll just kick back for now and watch the Oscars on TV, because next year, you can be damn sure I won't be doing that. Hi, is this the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences? Yes. Hi, this is Bob Garfield calling from National Public Radio in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Could I reserve 2 seats on the aisle for the Oscars, please?
Are you calling as a member of the Academy? Are you talking about public sale or press, or what are you talking about?
Well, as a winner.
As a winner?
Well, you know, this film will get produced, and then...
If you're a nominee, then you get good seats.
Oh, good,
okay.
Good. What's the dress code?
The formal.
I don't want to be too fussy. Do you think the band collar would be okay, or shall I
go
with the...
I don't know. Okay?
Oh, okay. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.